People First Radio is a program about people, the society in which we live, and issues related to health and wellness.
Welcome to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. As more and more people have come to experience homelessness in Canada, encampments have sprung up in cities across the country. Without a system to find adequate housing for people in a timely manner, people are pushed into public spaces where a patchwork of bylaws often dictates where and when people are allowed to exist. Law professor Alexandra Flynn argues that bylaws constitute the primary response of the state to unhoused people living and surviving in public space. In The Bylaw State, Flynn and co-author Joe Hermer frame bylaws as central to the story of homelessness and urban governance. They cover how, in the absence of legislation outlining how municipalities must treat people living in encampments, court decisions have set out minimum protections for unhoused people. The book also looks at two case studies touching on Moccasin Flats in Prince George and Crab Park in Vancouver. I spoke with Alexandra Flynn.
My name is Alex, and I'm a professor at UBC. I teach and research the law, and mainly around issues of housing and homelessness.
And you are one of the authors of The Bylaw State. And I'm wondering if you could tell me, how have municipal governments, as you present in the book, come to be on the front lines of sort of regulating homelessness?
Yeah. So in Canada, we don't have a very good housing framework, like a legal framework for who's responsible for housing. So most other issues, there's a government that's listed in the Constitution, and that's the government that you would turn to be accountable. And so housing is one of those areas where nobody really wants to be accountable, because it costs money and it's complicated, and different powers land at different governments. And so because of that, you know, after about three decades of not enough funding in building new housing, and especially housing that's deeply affordable, we've gotten ourselves into a situation where we're short at least 4.5 million homes. And we just don't have enough homes. We don't have enough homes for people who need them. And so the people who end up getting priced out, you know, have to move into rental housing. We don't have enough of that. And then if there's anything that happens, you know, a mental health crisis or a divorce or you lose a job or all sorts of things that just, you know, that just can happen to anyone, you know, people can find themselves into becoming without a home, without a secure home. And eventually, if they really don't have any way to fall back on support, they may become so poor that they need to sleep outside. And then it becomes a municipal issue because municipalities oversee public space. And so, you know, parks are not meant to be slept in. And there's bylaws that are written that say that, you know, you can't be here overnight, or you can't pitch a tent. You can't use this space in a certain way. And those are the bylaws that end up being used to remove people from those public spaces.
And so what were the questions about this process, these bylaws, that you set out to answer in your book?
Yeah. So my colleague and friend Joe and I, you know, we'd been part of a project for the Federal Housing Advocate where we were basically giving a sense of what was the situation with homelessness and with encampments around the time of the pandemic. And in the process of doing that, we couldn't really find anything about the legal aspect of bylaws and what it meant for unhoused people. And so we felt like that was really missing, and it was something that was needed out there. Like, why are, exactly your question, actually, like, why are bylaws, why are we talking about bylaws when we're talking about homelessness? And so we sat down to tell the story of bylaws and how they've come to be the way in which homelessness is governed in Canada.
Well, could you give me some examples of the things municipalities are aiming to accomplish through bylaws that sort of regulate or otherwise interact with homelessness?
Yeah, so there's a bit of a range. I mean, I as a Joe, it actually did this big research project and found that most bylaws were pretty much crafted in the same way, same kind of language. So there's a huge chunk of bylaws that govern streets or parks that are pretty uniform across Canada, and those just aim to regulate those spaces. So the premise of them is that everybody uses these spaces, and we need to find a way to live together. So, like, what are the rules that need to be followed in these spaces in terms of, loitering and garbage and how long you can stay and what you can put there. More recently, after some legal cases that went to the court about the use of bylaws and the application to homeless people, some municipalities have created specific bylaws around homelessness where they say, there's no sleeping outdoors allowed except, and then they kind of provide for the language that the court decisions do, which is unless it's at night and there's no shelter space available. But then these bylaws go on further to say, but not near schools or playgrounds or flower beds or et cetera, like a whole list, or, and not this park and not that park. So they basically are taking the language of the court case and then they're adding to it other restrictions around where tents and homeless people can go.
And as you outline there, and you outline in the book, there seems to be this dance between municipalities and bylaws, and then the court system. And I'm wondering if you could tell me how the courts come into this picture in the first place.
Yeah, so the courts end up being this really important player in this whole situation because the municipalities will, basically look for an injunction to remove people from encampments. And so they go to court and they argue why this is necessary. Sometimes they don't even go to court, but if they do, they argue why it's necessary. And increasingly, homeless people with their lawyers and advocates will argue that the use of that injunction or the attempt that the city's trying to do is against the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It violates the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and specifically Section 7, the right to life, liberty, and security of the person. And so that's the situation that we've come to, which is a municipality will take some kind of action. And if people can, and it's very difficult to find lawyers who work in this area or who have the capacity to bring these cases, but if they can, they'll go to court and fight against it and say, you can't do that. You can't remove this encampment because there's no shelter spaces for us to go to. And it's therefore violating our life, liberty, and security of the person.
And you've touched on a few cases where there seems to be this pattern that emerges where a municipality is looking to have an encampment removed or cleared out, and a judge essentially comes down and says, well, if you want to be able to do this, you need to show that there are places for the people living in that encampment to go. And there's some nuance from decision to decision about what exactly that looks like, whether that's available shelter beds, whether that's shelter beds that kind of would match up well with the people who are actually living in the encampment. I'm wondering if you could talk to me about what we see the results of some of these processes being.
Yeah, so the court, so in 20, 2009, there was a landmark decision from Victoria called Victoria and Adams, and that's the case that set this framework of municipalities cannot remove people at night if there's not enough accessible shelter space. So since then, there's been a number of other cases that have been brought in British Columbia and Ontario. I should note that because of the legal system, a case that's decided in BC will be binding on other courts in if it concerns BC municipality, but it doesn't apply in another part of Canada. So each province has its own set of decisions related to this issue. But increasingly, these cases are coming and asking, like, what does accessible mean? What is the meaning of this? Because the main challenge with shelters to begin with temporary shelters, is they're not a very good space for most unhoused people to go to. They're congregate, meaning like people sleep usually in big rooms together. They might have their belongings stolen. They might have other reasons why that's not an appropriate space for them. Maybe they have a partner, maybe they have a pet, maybe they have trauma of being in that kind of situation before and they can't sleep knowing that there's other people around them because they harmed in that situation, or a whole host of other reasons why a big open space like that is not appropriate for them. And so courts have increasingly said, what does accessible mean? And it doesn't, it means that it has to be appropriate for the people who are in that situation, who are in that encampment.
So how do some of these conditions or other factors of the court decisions, how do they play back into the municipal context? How do they kind of get translated from this is a decision to this is what a municipality does differently, or this is what all municipalities in, say, the province do differently?
So this is part of the reason why Joe and I make this argument that this is really the wrong way of regulating or even dealing with a humanitarian crisis like homelessness. Because if a case is brought, it's specific to the facts of that case, the people who are involved, the officials who are involved. So it's not like the courts are saying governments, municipal governments have to do X and Y. You know, that's not what's happening with the courts. They're deciding the facts of that particular case. So it means that we don't have very clear and specific rules for all municipalities about what they are supposed to do to address homelessness. Recently, there was a case that came out of Ontario, the Waterloo decision, which I'm happy to talk to. It's a huge game changer legal decision. And the court there did two really important things. So one thing that they did is, in addition to Section 7 of the Charter, they held that the bylaws in that case were discriminatory under the equality provision of the Charter, which really means that a so-called neutral bylaw that seems to apply to everybody equally actually isn't applying equally when it comes to people who are homeless. So homelessness was considered a ground, an analogous ground, because so many people who are homeless are racialized or Indigenous or have mental health issues or other challenges, or are women. You know, there's a whole host of disproportionate impact on certain people. So that's a huge game changer. But to answer your question, the second big game changer of that decision is that the court said, municipality, you need to come back here after you make changes to your policies. And we'll tell you if you can then remove these folks from the encampment. So the court it's called a Declaration Plus. And the court was essentially supervising the actions of the municipality. And it's really important because the court in that decision said some really noteworthy things, but one of them was, we don't want to be doing this. We, the courts, don't want to be doing this. We're doing this because governments are not acting. They're not addressing this issue of homelessness, which has increased by over 300% in the last 8 years. And so the courts are increasingly called to take on this role, but it's actually not their role to take on. It's the government's role to take on. And, but they don't trust, interpretation is they believe they need to keep jurisdiction over this issue to supervise what it is that the municipality does.
This is People First Radio. My guest is Alex Flynn. She's an associate professor at the Peter Allard School of Law at UBC and director of the Housing Research Collaborative. Flynn is also the co-author of The Bylaw State, a book which explores the intersection between Canadian municipalities and homeless encampments. What you seem to be suggesting that there's this vacuum around the rules that kind of regulate homelessness or various consequences of homelessness, and that municipalities are creating these bylaws to try and fill that vacuum, and then the court has a role in determining whether or not these bylaws infringe on people's charter rights in certain cases. What kind of tools do you suggest should be used to maybe fill this vacuum instead of what we have now?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, I mean, municipalities, quite frankly, don't have the resources to fix the crisis that we're in. Homelessness is part of a larger, as we talked about at the beginning, it's part of a larger issue with our housing situation, the gaps that we have in housing. And municipalities, you know, mostly rely on property taxes to fund their operations. They don't have a lot of money. This crisis is connected to income. It's connected to mental health services. It's connected to a whole host of health issues as well. And so it's landing on the front lines of municipalities. And I think municipalities are different, right? I used to work in a municipality. I mean, there's lots of people who are there and really want to help and really want to do the right thing, but there's just limits in the tools that are available for them. So the truth is, we cannot fix this issue by just relying on municipalities. The federal government and municipal governments have to be involved, and provincial governments have to be involved in figuring out a solution that addresses it. And it is possible, you know, like if you look to other countries and what they have done, they have implemented models of governance that draw on all governments to step in and provide the kind of help that they can. So what's my perfect alternative view? It's to recognize that this is a terrible crisis, that the legal framework that we have right now doesn't seem designed to fix it, but increasingly courts are going to say, this is the government's job to do it, and we're going to force them to.
And an inference I took from reading the book, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong or clarify this, was that basically right now, the way this plays out is that if you're going through homelessness, a lot of these bylaws basically make your life harder almost no matter what, no matter if you're doing things that are in some way, shape, or form harmful to other members of the public, that like in theory, these bylaws are trying to protect. They sort of make your life harder because you're experiencing homelessness. If that's the case, what do you feel like is a better kind of interim solution? Like, what are some of the specific issues with these bylaws, and what do you think could be done differently by municipalities who are presumably making these bylaws looking to address certain specific issues?
Yeah, so we actually have examples of municipalities that have adopted a housing rights framework, or like housing as a human rights framework, and recognize that people who are homeless need things like bathrooms. They need access to water. They need access to showers. They need safe places to keep their belongings. That the more stable they can be with those kinds of services, the more able they're going to be to transition into other forms of housing, as well as not being more harmed by being forced to move around all the time and trying to find some place that's safe for them to be. So, you know, in the absence of a multi-governmental, intergovernmental strategy to address this, municipalities could adopt this framework of drawing from human rights work. And there's, you know, the Federal Housing Advocate, The Shift, these organizations have put together lots and lots and lots of materials that are available to help. So that's one thing that can be done, is just adopting a human rights approach to homelessness. When I do a lot of work directly with advocates and with people who are living in this situation, and it's going to sound kind of like a small thing that could be done differently, but it's actually a pretty big thing, which is to treat people like they're human beings. And in the Waterloo case, we saw the judge say that as well. He said something like, you know, homeless people are not the other, they are us. And so the biggest thing that I heard from unhoused people myself was, treat us like human beings. And I think doing that changes everything. Like, bylaws are meant to regulate spaces. They regulate things like, what is garbage? You know, a blight that shouldn't be there in public space. And homeless people are treated in the same category. You know, like in one of the chapters in our book, we note that in one municipality, there's a form that can be filled out where members of the public can note if there's disorder, you know, like, is there trash? Is there this? Is there a homeless person? You know, like, those are not the same things. One of those people is a human being, and treating people in that way actually would make a profound difference in how interactions went and how discretion was used. you know, a lot of the choices that municipalities make are around discretion, what they consider to be loitering and what they don't. So I would say human rights, treating people like they're human beings. And then the third major thing is municipalities acting like advocates for all members of their community, including people who are unhoused. So, you know, there is a lot of power that comes from municipal organizing and lobbying towards other governments, provincial and federal. And so coming together and demanding that these other governments step up with resources to address this issue would go a long way as well.
And in your book, you look especially at two case studies in Prince George and in Vancouver. What do you think are the big takeaways from those stories?
So the big takeaways are that in both of these situations, there were multiple court cases that ended up taking place. And just this kind of dance that occurred between those living in the encampment and the municipality about what was appropriate for what had to be done in order for the unhoused people to be removed from this space. And so our takeaway from this is that it doesn't solve homelessness to do this, to have this dance where a court case will be brought, you know, there might be some delay in removing homeless people, but in the end, there's not a lot done to actually address the systemic issues that are at play. And so it's part of our larger thesis that this isn't helpful, you know, to use the court's time, to use the municipality's time, and definitely not the people who are living in the situation's time of, you know, sort of trying to remove people from these spaces without trying to figure out where they're supposed to go and how they're supposed to live dignified lives.
I'm remembering interviews that I have done in the past with folks from municipalities, and when presented with the fact that, you know, perhaps this isn't going to address the root causes, the response has been a sort of like, we know, but what we're trying to do is address the concerns of other people in the community or address these risks we feel the situation presents to the community. What do you feel is important about maybe, or what do you feel is the kind of context around that view of things?
Listen, I understand, you know, I live in a city myself. I know how complicated it is to, you know, want to have spaces where you can walk your dog and take your kid out and feel safe at night. And, you know, the issues that come about when there's people who are living in situations that, you know, like nobody really wants to be sleeping in a park. Especially if there's no services, no bathrooms, no showers, no water, you can imagine how difficult it is to survive but also to what the impacts are on that space. So I get it. And at the same time, these are our governments. They need to represent everybody that lives in the city, not just the people who have loud voices who are objecting. They need to come up with creative solutions to figure out how to make this work based on a human rights approach. And I know it's hard. I know it's difficult. But what we will have if that doesn't happen is more and more courts, as they have already done, making decisions that say, these are not the same. You know, an unhoused person doesn't have the same constitutional rights that a neighbor does. An unhoused person has protected constitutional rights. So their rights in this situation are higher than the soccer player or than the dog walker or than the kid who wants to use the playground, because they are so disproportionately impacted by the situation. And I guess I would say we have to confront the fact in Canada that we have created this situation of a housing and homelessness humanitarian crisis. We have done this through our governments, through our decisions around how much we tax, what our priorities are, and we have to make different decisions around it. So I don't think just because I think there are things that can be done, and we've seen things that have been done in other jurisdictions. Like for example, the City of London, Ontario, which created a whole framework, a human rights framework for homelessness in that jurisdiction by providing basic services and what that allowed for. You know, we've seen examples from Toronto on for hospitals that have used really creative solutions on how to bring services to people and create housing right on hospital grounds. We can make different choices as a society, and we have to do that. We should not be relying on these bylaws to be the way that we govern this crisis.
Do you think that this issue highlights something larger about just the governance structure in Canada and perhaps the disproportionate responsibilities thrust on municipalities compared with their ability to have any kind of revenue or real means of dealing with them? And even just like the amount of time available to the people working in the level of government to dedicate to solutions versus how many issues they're tasked with facing?
100%. Municipalities are considered creatures of the province under Canadian law. They cannot have income taxes. They don't have access to revenue to deal with the issues that fall on their doors. They're subject to the decisions of provincial governments. Even when they get funding for things like homelessness, there's a whole bunch of hoops that they have to jump through. If they get funding for capital expenses related to building housing, that doesn't address the operating costs, providing healthcare services and other services on site. It is an untenable situation that municipalities are on the front lines for this crisis and they don't have the resources available to fix it. And the reaction to that should not be that human rights get left behind, which is really the argument that Joe and I are making in our book.
Is there anything else you think it's important to bring to the conversation today on these issues?
Yes. So the federal government enacted a law called the National Housing Strategy Act in 2019. And as part of that law, they are mandated to have a national housing strategy. They've had one since the legislation was created. 2.0 is being discussed and decided now. So this should be one of the things that is on the list of items that the federal government takes seriously. This should be part of our national housing strategy to address homelessness. So for those of you who are listening, you know, if you have an opportunity to weigh in, the federal government will be consulting on the national housing strategy. Make your voices heard. Say that this is something that you care about as well. You know, voices really do make a difference.
Alex Flynn, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me on this.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Alexandra Flynn is an associate professor at the Peter Allard School of Law at UBC and director of the Housing Research Collaborative. She's also co-author of the book, The Bylaw State, Encampment Evictions, and the Struggle for Public Space.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.